Well, again, welcome. It's good to see you. For those of you who are new, my name is Matthew Grad, and I'm not normally the person who's sitting in the seat. It's usually either Sakula or Jessica Swanson. So I'm really happy to be with you this morning. I was just reflecting a bit about series of mental activities that was going on with me yesterday. It started with this wish to spend or to pay respects to Lompo Samedo on his 90th birthday. So his 90th birthday is coming up in July. There's a big gathering in May as well. So, looking at my partner Ruby and I making plans to go and have the opportunity perhaps to pay respects to him. So, and then I was thinking, okay, well, that's that would be lovely. It's a bit of a journey, flying out to England to go see him and the thought of the plane ride was not really uplifting for me, especially because I tend to favor among the different mental states. Aversion is one of my go-to or my default mental state. And being on a plane, especially with the roar of the engines and et cetera, et cetera. So I said, well, so I had this idea. I noticed that people have these noise canceling headphones that they wear on trips. So I thought, oh yeah, that'd be good. I'll get some noise canceling headphones and that'll make things really nice. So a couple of days ago, I went through the bit of the hell of trying to figure out which device would be the one that had my name on it, that I really could connect with. And it's funny because it's totally an emotional type of thing. I look like there was this, Bose makes these, and they had this really sleek, modern, very up-to-date look. And I thought, I don't like that kind of stylish look. So there's so anyway, so I'm looking, and I finally said, okay, well, this one Sony looks a lot clunkier. That seems like it's more my style. So I've got so I figured that's what I'm going to get. And so I went on to the website of like Best Buy or something, and I see them there, and so I put it in my shopping cart, and then I go to the checkout. And looking at, oh, well, they deliver it, et cetera, et cetera. So finally I said, what are you doing? Just tracing backwards, how did I get here? How did I get the shopping cart at Best Buy or something? And it was because of, as best I can figure, it was being triggered by the memories of unpleasant experiences on the plane with noise. And so I was kind of trying to shape my future experience in a way that I would avoid that unpleasantness of being on the plane. And that's how it is, isn't it? So we find ourselves in any number of places that we have no idea how we got there, but we can usually trace it back to, just like I did, some sort of intention or motivation that is triggered by some sort of experience of either pleasantness or unpleasantness. Generally, those two are going to be the main ones. The third type of feeling, of course, is that which is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It's just a neutral feeling. But in this case, it came from, not surprisingly, in my case, out of the sense of unpleasantness or aversion. And so it's just something to maybe reflect on a little bit about how our experiences of just these different states of pleasant and unpleasant tend to lead us around, and not a new teaching, but that we can become kind of an automaton to just reacting in response, trying to minimize discomfort and maximize pleasantness. And the issue that comes up is that how is it that we're able to reclaim our autonomy, our freedom from being pulled around by just a barrage of different feelings that impinge on our senses during the course of the day, or in this case, just remembering, months ago when I was flying. So how are we able to access a certain sense of wisdom around that, to be able to step back? And it's not an easy thing. Is that even, we practice for, in my case, for a fairly long amount of time, and I still can get a day or two down the road in this. And by the way, I expect I'm going to buy these, so I don't fool myself in thinking, well, I think I'm going to get off the material, I don't know how it's going to end up, but if I were a betting person, I would wager that I'm going to come up with something to, because I'm so averse to, anyway, so, now the Buddha, as I don't know if you've had a lot of experience reading or discussing or studying any of the Buddha's suttas, the teachings that are attributed to the Buddha 2600 years ago. But if you've spent much time with those, you'll see that one common thing is that the Buddha would offer similes or analogies to help. He would say, well, some people, they understand better through analogy. So I'll offer a teaching, and then I'll say, well, so I'll give an analogy. Like, he'll talk about different kinds of wood, or he'll talk about grasses, or he'll talk about charcoal pits, or talk about sheaves of grass leaning against each other, or, just lumps of foam on the water, or bubbles, or banana trees, or it just goes on and on and on. He's just had this gift for being able to come up with images or similes in order to really help get beyond just sort of a mental concept about what he's saying and get some more of a heart, just more of an intuitive understanding of what he was driving at. And Ajahn Chah had a similar kind of ability to do that too. He would offer these various similes to a lot of the farmers and that he was talking to might have to do with oxen or grass or whatever it might be, or food of one type or another. So the Buddha was giving this discourse, as best I can recall about it, about how quickly the mind moves. So he says the mind moves really quickly. And so then somebody in the audience said, Bhante, you often give analogies or similes or images for to help people understand better what it is you're teaching. Could you give us an analogy for how quickly the mind moves? And the Buddha says the mind moves quickly, so quickly there's no analogy or simile or image that I can come up with that really can convey how quickly the mind moves. So it's fast. It's really fast. And more than that, it moves on various different levels. So if you think about the mind as not only the activity of thoughts and emotions, but just the awareness of them, the different kind of consciousness that is happening. I was talking to Ajahn Siddhanto at the Hermitage yesterday about this, and we were talking about it on Friday as well, and during investigations, that these mental qualities are just operating on so many different levels, many of which we are simply outside of our mental apparatus. The consciousness isn't really aware of the connection between, say, the gut and the brain, or there's so many parts, as Ajahn was saying yesterday, so many parts of the brain that we simply don't have access to, parts of the mind that we're just unaware of, and it moves very quickly. That we move from a sense impression to a feeling to a desire to setting that into motion, and they're all swirling around on simultaneously different things that are triggering us. So the question can arise, with this moving so quickly and on so many different levels, many of which are beyond our ken, we can't really even see them happening. How do we manage to extract ourselves from from being just a hapless being in servitude or being a slave to these various different mental phenomenon? How is it that we're able to extract ourselves from that and be able to exercise our lives with a level of freedom of turning our thoughts and our speech and our actions in a way that are in ways that are skillful, helpful, and that bring us happiness, true happiness, and lessens the amount of suffering and dukkha that arises through anxiety and agitation and desire and so forth. How do we go about that? So we were talking about this on Friday night during investigations, and it came up again yesterday when I was talking to Ajahn Siddhanto, and it reminded me of this other discourse that the Buddha gave, and he said that he's talking about different things that were, what were the words, marvelous, something like it's, he says the word, what is marvelous and amazing and marvelous? I can't remember the exact words. He said, one of the things that, what is it that's amazing and marvelous? And he gave a couple examples, and one of them he said, and what else is amazing and marvelous? It's amazing and marvelous that one can hear the teachings, understand the teachings, and then conform oneself to the teachings. It's just remarkable. What is it this remarkable, amazing, that's so that despite how we might think that this is all of this is operating so quickly that we don't really have a chance to jump in time, and normally we don't. Oftentimes, like for example, in this case, it took me a couple of days before I kind of was able to stop and reassess. And Ajahn Chah used to say that we may have a real understanding of how the feelings and the mental phenomena and action are all interrelated, but and goodness knows how many times I've said something that I then regret pretty quickly having said. But I'm and so for me, a lot of the practice is about closing the gap between the action and the understanding, or the bringing skillfulness to it, and that operates over time. But basically, this once we sort of aligned ourselves to the sense of understanding, basically the basic understanding is what is it that what kind of activity or kamma is it that leads to the lessening of dukkha, the lessening of problem, and the increase of happiness and joy. So we understand, so we're interested in what that means, and then as we become more versed in what those are, and equally important, what those aren't. Like I know that if and when I get the headphones, because I'm very aversive, there's going to be a period of real frustration. It just doesn't really work very well. I can't get it to line up with my app, or I go on the, and these are things that, so as we look outside of ourselves for happiness or satisfaction and contentment, we just know that that is not, that these external sources that we oftentimes turn to aren't really going to fit the bill. This is a lesson that we see over and over again. And for most people in the world, what they see is that these headphones aren't doing it for me, but I bet something, this other thing that now I'm going to turn to will. Or they don't even have that conscious thought, but they just set those aside, and then they're yearning for something that's going to provide a level of just ease and satisfaction and happiness. For the most of, for the most part, we don't really, we're not really clued in about where we're going to find that. But it's a beautiful thing that we do have this deep yearning for ease and satisfaction. And I think, as Ajahn Sumedho likes to say, it's this real, this real yearning for the end of separation. And we feel this separation that we feel from each other, and so forth, that we don't really recognize that for what it is. And so we tend to look for ways to ease that pain that we feel from this separation. So going back to how it is that we actually are able to transform ourselves, this is something that Ajahn was talking about with me and Ruby yesterday, is that, in terms of our practice, what is important about the teachings of the Buddha that we're taking as a guide for ourselves, is that they lead to some sort of transformation in a positive way. And as the Buddha said, this was possible despite the quickness of the mind, that and the frustration that we feel for, I know James, you on Friday were expressing some, like, I do align myself with the wholesome and skillful activities, but it just seems like there's so much to reveal and uncover and move and change. It was almost a sense of, like, I can't, I think the sun will probably, I don't think you said, didn't say this, but like the sun will probably burn out before I am able to, like, uproot all of these different kinds of issues that I have. And so that could be discouraging. But if we look at, I used the, I remember that Ruby and I had the great privilege to have an audience with the Dalai Lama 20 years, must be 20 years ago now, along with a group of other, small group of other people. And he was asked whether he was really satisfied with his practice and the progress that he'd made. And he said, "Oh, I don't really look. He said, maybe every 5 or 10 years I'll look and see how things are going. But mostly I don't really pay attention to that." It just, like, we just kind of trust that as we become more drawn to the benefits that we see from simply, say just from kindness, from being, the gratification we get from being kind or generous, or from not creating issues through our speech, etc. We say, "Oh, this is really very, it really enlightens or brightens the mind and the heart." And it's like, okay, well, we'll just, it's very important for us to, to assess on a regular basis how things are going, and And where might I put my attention towards? It can be really fun to pick something and say, I think I'd like to work on this. I think that would be enjoyable. But once we as we become more, we have more evidence that our lives seem to be better and equally important or more important, the people that we associate with, their lives seem to be better because we're not causing the problems for them that we would otherwise do, then that picks up a certain kind of momentum, and we can look back over a period of some years and recognize that things have really remarkably, it's a marvelous, amazing and marvelous thing that things do shift for us, and that we do have a lot of control over being able to walk this path in a way that is beautiful for ourselves and others. So we get that confidence. And it's important, I think, to cultivate that trust and confidence rather than as I sometimes do when I say something hurtful, I can despair and I can really feel like, oh, I just, how is it that this has happened so many times and it's still this way? But those thoughts are, they're not only helpful, but they're counterproductive. We really have to learn how to resist the temptation to go into a state of like being dispirited about this. It's like, whoo, that wasn't useful. Okay. And then just, forgive ourselves, make the appropriate apologies, and then turn ourselves more towards this path of brightness and happiness and connection. Yeah, so I'll offer those reflections to you there. Thank you for your attention.